It's Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Before the break, Dr. Harvey Tannenbaum, the director of the Chandra X-ray Observatory at Harvard, described how the now 15-year-old telescope in high Earth orbit is still returning a lot of data about the universe. But Chandra isn't the only weapon in NASA's arsenal. SOFIA, or Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy, is another of NASA's data-collecting missions. And very soon, our own astronomy contributor, Jean Creighton, will take a very special journey to take part in it. She joins me now in the studio to explain.
I am going to get to observe from the largest flying astronomical observatory in the world. That is flying in the stratosphere, which is about 45,000 feet. And the advantage of being so high is that means you're above 99% of all the water vapor, pesky water vapor that is happy to breathe, but unhappy if you want to look at infrared light.
Okay, so you're going to be on this trip. How did this happen? Back up a little bit and tell us how you got selected for this, because not everyone gets to do this.
No, of course, no. This is a highly oversubscribed opportunity. It's called a NASA ambassador, and they selected in the end 12 groups. Each group has two people. A lot of the people involved are teachers, but NASA is also interested in inviting people like me who do a lot of public outreach with the planetarium. And they wanted to get us in so that we can bring all that excitement and the science that we learn to everybody.
So you're going to go up one time?
Two times, hopefully. So the whole project, so I will be in California for a week, and the hope is that I get two, you know, weather permitting and all that, that I get two 10-hour shifts at 45,000 feet.
So how do you get up there? I mean, is this, you literally take off?
Yeah. So this is an airplane. It's a specially equipped Boeing 747. In fact, this is a special, it's called the 747 SP because it was a special airplane. Boeing tried the idea of having an aircraft that has fewer seats, but that allows it to go longer stretches. It turns out that Boeing, after a while, realized that this isn't what they need. They needed more seats and maybe less range. So this one got repurposed, and now there is a 100-inch telescope put in the side. So there's a hole in the airplane, and of course, you can imagine they've done a lot of testing to make sure that the plane behaves as you would hope a plane behaves. But there is a hole in the hull of the side of the airplane, and that's where the telescope is isolated. And the good thing about that is that at 45,000 feet, the air is very cold, which is good because that means that the telescope isn't bombarded by noise. So the telescope can see what it's wanting to see, and it's not seeing the infrared radiation that a body like me at room temperature, I emit quite a bit of infrared radiation, as do you, Bonnie.
I do.
Yes. But our eyes aren't sensitive to it. So that's why our telescope comes in to help us to see things that our eyes and other kinds of telescopes can't see.
What is the kind of data that you're going to be collecting in this kind of flight that you couldn't get, say, from the Hubble telescope? Are you just looking at a different spectrum?
Different telescopes are sensitive to different parts of the spectrum. So the Hubble Space Telescope is used mostly for either visual, where it's important to be in front of, you know, on top of the whole atmosphere, or parts of the ultraviolet where you simply cannot observe it from the ground. Time on the Hubble Space Telescope is much more expensive, so this fulfills also the need of just more data a little cheaper.
Now, are you looking for something in particular, or don't you know that yet? Do you know what kind of data you're collecting?
I won't know specifically until I know when I'm going, because at this point, as you can imagine, the scheduling considerations are significant, and we won't know until a month before we fly. So I should fly sometime between the 1st of April and the last day of May. So I don't know yet what projects we're going to be involved with, but the kinds of projects that SOFIA does involves anywhere from the solar system all the way to galaxies. So because we can see infrared and dust and gas emits a lot of infrared radiation, we get to see say, if you wanted to study the rings of Saturn or other rings, that would be a good choice. If you wanted to see how planets form in other solar systems, that's a good choice, because when stars are young, they're still enshrouded with all the gas and dust from which they came. So when stars are really young, you can't see through all that muck unless you have an infrared telescope. Also, one of the most exciting things we can do with infrared telescopes nowadays is we can see some of the very youngest galaxies in the whole universe. So we're still trying to put together how a particular galaxy, how do galaxies get born, and that is one of the things that we want to put together. Find out what they look like very early on in their careers and look at different galaxies at different stages of their evolution and put together how they get to look the way they do now.
Well, okay, the science is really cool, but to me, the fun part is you're actually going to get to go and you're going to be that high up in the air. Are there any special things that they've told you need to prepare, things you have to wear, things you have to be aware of?
Well, first of all, we're going to need a medical clearance and security clearance. We spend a week there, and the first half of the week prepares you for all the kinds of things that you need to know. One thing they've told us a few times, so I guess it must be true, it's very loud. I mean, this is not a, it's not like a commercial airliner where
it's dampened a bit.
Even it's still pretty loud, but obviously you don't have a hole at the side of your airplane. So it's going to be fairly loud. I've seen a couple of pictures, and it looks like it might be cool as well, so people are dressed for cold. I had to laugh because they were telling us, don't give us your special request for food. This is not going to be chicken or pasta. You'll bring your own food.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I thought, okay, well, that helps understand the scope of this. We are going to spend time with astronomers who are on board to get their own data. But apparently some astronomers opt for other people to get their data, that they don't have the time to invest in
to actually
getting
go on
them
the flight.
Themselves,
yeah.
which seems a little strange to me, but I'm happy that they want other people to collect their data. I have a special affinity toward infrared astronomy since I spent some time at Caltech as a postdoctoral researcher. And I was involved in an infrared satellite as the scheduler. I was the coordinator of 12 different science groups, and I was trying to make sure that we schedule their observing time so that we can get as much out of our allotted time as possible from a scientific point of view and make sure that the individual science goals of each program were met. And that was tricky because there were a lot of even conflicting needs and wants.
I was going to say competing demands.
Yes.
On limited time.
So that was tricky. So anyway, it's great to, you know, be part of that again.
Well, and to actually be able to go.
Yes.
Is the plane set up in such a way that you can actually look out the window when you're not working with the data?
I think so.
So
yeah.
You'll actually be able to see the curvature and all of that. Oh, that. You know, the science fiction geek in me is thinking, oh, I would love to do that, to be able to see the curvature of the Earth.
Yeah, I must say that it's been, this whole experience has been sweetened by the fact that I'm reading Chris Hadfield's book. He's a Canadian astronaut, and it's a great read. But he's talking about all the preparation that he needs to do. Obviously, an astronaut needs to do a whole lot more. It kind of gets you in that frame of mind that there's going to be this drama of getting into this huge airplane. I'm not a pilot. I've never flown any planes, but I love flying as a passenger. So the idea that I get to go into, you know, a Boeing 747 and be that high in the sky is exciting in and of itself. To have, in addition, the opportunity to get observations in the infrared is a second bonus. But the third one, of course, is that I'm going to have to think about how to share, how to best share that story as it unfolds and afterwards with my audiences and with the public.
Absolutely. Well, of course, you're going to bring your camera phone.
Of course.
Yeah, you'll be videoing along with everybody else. And you'll, if you can, send it back to us and we'll put it on the website.
Okay. That sounds like a plan.
Cool. Yeah. Since you're going to be going for all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very cool, Gene. So we'll be talking to you up until the point you go. And then, when you come back, we'll have a debrief. We'll have the official Lake Effect debrief.
I can't wait.
Me either. Thanks so much for telling us about this.
I'm so excited. Thank you, Bonnie, for giving me the opportunity.
Lake Effect contributor Gene Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium, which is located on the campus of UW-Milwaukee. Later this spring, Creighton and her partner Kathy Gustafson, who's a high school science teacher at Nicolet High School, will fly two missions in the stratosphere to help collect data for NASA's Stratospheric Observatory for Infrared Astronomy Project, otherwise known as SOFIA. There is a link to the SOFIA website from ours, wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Coming up next, we'll learn about a Milwaukee area organization that helps people get access to cars to get to work. We'll learn more when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.